This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We begin with the remarkable John Samuel Waters Jr., filmmaker, writer, actor, artist, and now author. He's written his memoirs, Mr. Know-It-All. And John Waters is, of course, a man who's been in the filmmaking business for about a half century, and he grew up in the great city of Baltimore, right outside in Lutherville, with his boyhood friend, Glenn Milstead, later known as Divine, and they collaborated on many of the most memorable and controversial films of the age, and John has written about everything in his life in Mr. Know-It-All. Good morning to you, John Waters.
Good morning. I haven't heard myself referred to John Samuel Waters Jr. since the last time I was arrested.
And that probably wasn't that long ago.
That was a long time ago, right?
Yeah, well, you have had a storied past and one that is much different. When I think of Baltimore and filmmaking, I think of you, and I think of Barry Levinson. Two different...
he's a good friend of mine, We became friends, and certainly we make films about Baltimore from a very different viewpoint, but both are kind of extreme.
Well, you were the child of a Roman Catholic parents, and your life, of course, has been one that has pushed the envelope. When did you leave the Boys Latin School of Maryland and become the John Waters that we know and love?
Well, I was only at Boys Latin School. That was summer school because I was failed. I was in Catholic school where they wouldn't let me graduate off the stage because of my hair and probably my grades, too. So I went to this private school for summer school, which basically they were just nice to my parents and passed me. It's weird. I got thrown out of practically every school I ever went to except grade school. And yet I recently have been the commencement speaker at two universities, prestigious ones, RISD and the School for Visual Arts in New York. And they gave me lifetime, diplomas and honorary degrees and everything. So it's kind of hilarious. Like, I've ended up being respectable somehow, and I've kind of stayed the same from the very first day I made a movie called Hag in a Black Leather Jacket when I was in high school.
Now, this connection that you have with Divine, as I mentioned, it started at formative points in your lives, and it's amazing that these two notable people were together at the same time in the same place. Do you remember the first time you met?
Yeah, because Divine's parents moved up the street from where my parents were in Lutherville, Maryland, and it wasn't until high school, and they ran a nursery for children, which Divine was their only child, which I wouldn't say he was the best advertisement for that. But Divine was very different than you may have imagined in high school. He was not trans. He didn't want to be a woman or anything. He was effeminate, and he got beat up all the time and everything, but he was kind of a nerd. And later, he used the anger he got from all the harassment he got from, also the teachers were as bad as the students at the time, to become this character Divine that we collaborated on. And Divine in real life was nothing like that. He didn't walk around and drag ever except when he was working. But he was happy to become this character that brought, he was thought up to scare hippies basically because that was our first audience.
When you first started collaborating, when did you know you really had something special with the two of you being together and working at the highest level of show business?
I don't know about the highest level, but certainly I thought he had the potential way more than he did. He said he didn't ever think anything could happen because we were in Lutherville, Maryland. How are we going to have success in the movie business? But when I made some really early movies with him, he played Jacqueline Kennedy in A Year Makeup, a movie I made in 1966. And so I saw his potential, and the audiences always came. We would rent churches, if you can imagine, because at the time they would let kind of protest movements have meetings there and stuff, and we would show these underground movies, and people would come, and I could see they liked them. But it was certainly never even noticed by the above-ground press at the time. And when it was, we got very negative reviews, which we used in the ads. I built a career on bad press.
Well, 1981, when I was a senior in college, there was Polyester featuring Divine opposite Tab Hunter. I know you took great delight in having Tab Hunter in one of your films.
Sure, yeah. It was a a real Hollywood movie star coming to join us. And I give him great credit for having the nerve to do that, because he really made that movie a big success, I think, by being in it. People couldn't believe it was possibly true that he would do it, especially in a movie that was shot in Odorama, which was a scratch-and-sniff card that came with it. That film has lasted. Criterion just put out a beautiful new restored DVD of it with a brand-new Odorama card. So that movie lives on, and I thank Tab certainly. And Divine and Tab got along very, very well. He even made another movie with Divine afterwards called Lust in the Dust that I didn't direct, but they got along so well they made another movie afterwards.
Were you amazed, John, at the success of Hairspray?
I was amazed by it. It was a Trojan horse. It snuck in mid-America, pushing the same values even my most radical films do. Did I ever think it would be playing in grade schools with a cast singing along and acting out? No, but I owe a lot to that, to the whole Broadway production and Mark and Scott, who wrote all the music and everything. So did I think? No, but I didn't think it wouldn't. I was an ambitious kid. I got Variety when I was 15 years old. So I wasn't naive in any way, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Did I think, you know, I've been doing this for 50 years now, and I just thank the audiences for letting me get away with it. And in Mr. Know-It-All, I kind of share all the war stories about how I got through the systems and all these different worlds I'm in, the art world and the music world and the movie business, and it's about learning how to negotiate, and that's maybe what Mr. Know-It-All is about.
The book is Mr. Know-It-All from John Waters, who had previous bestsellers, Role Models and Car Sick. And he is a man born in the Baltimore area and grew up there. And, of course, he is on the cutting edge of our evolution as a society for many years. And you were born the same year as Presidents Trump, Bush, and Clinton. I'm sure
I'm the same age, yeah. Who knows, you know? It's amazing to me, you know, that I'm the same age as Trump. God. You know, I'm weary of talking about Trump. I'm just hoping the election turns out the way it does. I'm sick of both ends in a way, though. It seems like everybody these days, I don't want to watch the news and have people tell me what to think. I have faith in my own opinion, certainly. So I think that Trump, to me, has even ruined bad taste. I mean, his bad taste isn't even funny.
How have you handled the pandemic?
Well, I'm living with it. You know, I've switched holding cells. I was in Baltimore for a couple months, and then I live in Provincetown in the summer, so I went there to my holding cell there, which isn't so bad. I can go swimming every day. I'm a writer, so every day I get up and write in my house, so it doesn't really matter where I am. But it has affected me. I lost, you know, all my speaking engagements I had for the whole year. Like everybody else, I don't have a job now. Somebody told me the other day, it's terrifying and boring, and I don't know anything else that could ever be described with those two words, but it's very true.
Now, it has been known for some time that you idolized Little Richard as you were growing up, and you had the chance to meet him, and you've noted that sometimes it's not always great to meet your idols.
Well, I still love Little Richard, and I wish that he had been the last man standing, although it's now Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, he was very homophobic, and sometimes. Then he was the opposite sometimes. He was torn between Jesus and gayness, which was kind of funny in the long run. And when I interviewed him, he got uptight, but I was there for Playboy. I mean, what did he think I was going to ask about? You know, and he had just released a book that confessed some of his most wildest nights. So did he not think I was going to ask him about that? But he was more worried about the readers of Jet, which I also got in the mail. But I guess he had trouble going back and forth between the religious world and the rock and roll world. And I think to the day he died, he probably thought that. But he was a great, great, great singer. And you know, you look at him today, how brave and how amazing it was that his career happened. I mean, the very first time I saw him, it was like seeing a spaceman. And my grandmother just almost cried because she heard Lucille blaring in the background and like her dishes shook. She knew something different was in her house than it had ever been there.
A listener asked about your connection with Patty Hearst. You got to know her, didn't you?
Oh, she's a great. She's Patricia Hearst now. Patty Hearst, I think, kind of, I mean, she knows that it's a losing battle. People are going to call her Patty Hearst for the rest of her life. She doesn't think that's funny, what happened to her, but she's moved on. You know, it was a long time ago. She was always telling the truth. That's why she's alive. If she hadn't gone along with everything, and for whatever reason, brainwashing or whatever, she'd be dead, like most of them are. So, yes, I was obsessed by that. And she said, oh, God, it's people like you while I went to jail. But that's long over with in her life. We're still really good friends. And she's a good comedian. She's been in, I think, 4 of my movies at least or more. So I would have never kept putting her in if she wasn't funny. And I think she came and made movies about me. Was at least then she could have fun. She could finally sign an autograph. People used to ask her to sign autographs. She said, for what? Uh-huh. For being a kidnap victim? I'm not signing autographs for that. But once she made a movie, she could sort of, I don't know, say screw you to that whole thing and move on.
Well, John Waters, thank you for joining us this morning. And the book is Mr. Know-It-All. What a career and what a life from one of the country's great filmmakers, John Waters. Thank you, sir. And we'll return with more Talk Louisiana after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Matt Doyle producing. Send us an email if you so choose to talk at talklouisiana.org. These are fascinating times we are in. The U.S. death count now from COVID-19, according to the Centers for Disease Control, 161,679. 161,679, and it is now projected that 230,000 Americans will be gone by Election Day. So let's hope that things get better. Louisiana's death count now is 4,097. We have one of the highest per capita rates for cases in the country. 877-217-5757 is your number, and talk at talklouisiana.org is our email. I'm told that Mark Ballard is on assignment today, as they say in the business, so we will not be able to have our usual Thursday visit with him, but we will be back in short order next week. And Mark, of course, always provides fascinating insights on the world at large. And he's one of those journalists, graduate of Columbia, great Ivy League school, and LSU, who could work anywhere in the country, but he works in Baton Rouge, where he has become a market legend, if you will, along with his beautiful bride, Donna Britt, who, as we know, has been fighting a grave diagnosis of ALS for a few years, and she is still with us and fighting gallantly through what is certainly a difficult, and that's putting it mildly, disease. And she is showing us all how to live under the most adverse of conditions. And Mark, who works at least and probably much more than a 40-hour week, is also tending to his beautiful wife, and we commend him for being the man he is. And we're joined now by Edwin Washington Edwards, the former governor of Louisiana, the only four-term governor in the history of our state. Edwin Washington Edwards served our state with distinction from 1972 to 1980, and then again from 1992 to 96, and in between, 84 to 88, only man in Louisiana history to be elected governor of our state 4 times, and he tomorrow will be 93 years old. Louisiana now has 2 governors, former governors, who are with us, who are both past the 90 mark. Mike Foster, who just made it in July, and Edwin Edwards, who's now 93 and still fit as a fiddle, as they say. And good morning to you, Governor Edwards.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you feeling today?
I feel very good. I'm very fortunate. And, you know, as you said, I'll be 93 tomorrow, but I'm in relative good health. I have a beautiful young wife who takes care of me. I have a 7-year-old baby boy who's the joy of my life right now. And my only problem is this. I'm just so sad and worried about our country with this virus and how it just doesn't seem to be in control. I know that when you're in office, you sometimes have information that the average citizen does not have, and it makes you more able to say what you think should be done, and sometimes it's controversial. But before I answer your next question, just let me say that we're lucky that we have a governor who knows what he's doing and who's consistent. And if we would all listen to him, we would get over this problem in this state a lot sooner. Now, I want to just simply this. I've been housebound born now for 5 months because of this virus. I haven't been out but one or two times when I had to do it for medical reasons. So I would recommend people, if you get out, have to get out, wear a mask. Number two, don't get in any kind of crowd because that's what's one of the big problems. And number three, test because it'll give you some information you need to protect yourself and to protect the country. And finally, let's all remember that while we have to take care of ourselves, we have to remember that we also have an obligation to other people and that we cannot and should not do anything which jeopardizes their life.
So Edwin Edwards has been housebound for 5 months, and you're a man who loves people and people love you. That has to be difficult to not be out and about and be glad-handed.
Yeah, I tell you the truth. I can't explain what it does to me. Like you say, I love people. I'm concerned about people, and here I'm stuck in my house, unable to get out and do what I would like to do to help people. But I'm doing what I have to do.
Well, you will be spending your birthday with your beautiful wife, Trina, who also has a birthday coming on August 19th. As we've noted,
right,
she's 51 years younger than you, and beautiful Eli, who is 7 years old. And I think you believe that at some point we'll have another EWE in the governor's mansion.
Oh, yes. Trina already has some shirts made for him. EWE for Governor 2056.
Well, he's quite a young man, and you have, of course, a family that is grown and grandkids who are older than Eli. But Edwin Edwards has had a full life, to say the least. And years ago on this program, you said that on Donald Trump's 50th birthday, you were the guest on his yacht. You spent the night on Trump's yacht when the president, turned 50 years old. Do you recall that?
Oh, very well. It was in, not in Las Vegas, but in
must have been in New Jersey, maybe?
New Jersey, right.
Okay.
And let's see, there were probably 75 to 100 people at his birthday party.
And you were there. What do you think of him?
Yes.
What do you think of his performance as president, independent? I know you like him, but sometimes we like people and don't like the way they conduct their jobs. What do you think?
Well, I certainly like him, but the problem is his inconsistency. I mean, sometimes I don't understand how he can take the positions that he has, but he might have information that I don't have. So I'm not going to criticize him. I'll just say, if there's anything I can do to help him, since he hasn't called on me, I'll be happy to do it.
And your wife, Trina, is a Republican, isn't she?
That's correct. I tell Billy Nungesser that he's my second favorite Republican. And he said, who's the first? I said, I sleep with him.
Now, when we look back on your life, as we often do, and hopefully it'll continue for many years, Edwin has promised to make the century mark, so we've got at least another 7 years left. It's an amazing legacy. How would you write the first graph if you were to be penning an obit that might appear at some point in the distant future?
Well, I just simply say he died too soon.
He died too soon. Who's the most?
I'll say this. I have no reason at all to complain. I've had my problems in life. I had a very unfair trial, which ended up sending me to prison for 8.5 years. Totally unnecessary, totally unfair. And the judge, who was very, 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 very biased against me, died a couple of years afterwards, and all of the major players representing the federal government ended up having to resign because they caught doing things they shouldn't have done. And it was a bad thing. But I've had so much good fortune in my life. People have been so nice to me. I don't complain.
Well, we hope you have a great birthday. A listener does ask, what's your opinion of the current governor, John Bel Edwards?
Well, I don't think it's possible for anybody to do a better job than he's doing. And I admire him very much. We talk on the phone not as much as we used to because he's so busy with this virus and with the Congress and with the legislative problems that he has. But I admire him very much. And I'm very, you know, I like to tell people he's a distant cousin of mine. he's really not.
Well, Governor, thanks for staying the course, and your spirit is infectious. You certainly are a man of immense energy at 93 almost. Thanks for being with us, and happy birthday. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, your number 877-217-5757. We mentioned that August is usually the prime time for hurricanes, late August, early September, when we look past at the past, and Hurricane Betsy in 65, Camille in 69, Andrew in 92, Katrina in 2005. All of those were hurricanes that hit us in either the last week of August or the first week of September. And we're here on the sixth day of August. We are actually 23 days short of the 15th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And with us is Insurance Commissioner Jim Donilon. And good morning to you, Commissioner Donilon.
Good morning, Jim. And I apologize for the delay in getting to you. I was actually talking to my doctor's office, having been exposed to someone who tested positive yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. So what did they tell you? What did they tell you?
They told me to wait 5 days before getting tested myself, because they don't want to test me, get a negative because of the incubation period, I guess it would be called, and then me ultimately be positive and have spread it around my family and my colleagues and coworkers, et cetera. So I'm waiting until Monday to get tested, but I'm staying home.
Well, over 100,000 people in Louisiana have tested positive, and the Centers for Disease Control says the actual number is 10 times that. So that'd be a million people, and we have a state with about 4.8 million. So we're getting to the point where more than 20% of the people have probably had it or do have it. So I would suspect we're around people all the time who have it, and you're a politician, so you are exposed. It's the nature of
Absolutely.
The beast, but how does that affect your job and the people who work for you?
It's interesting. My personal assistant, her fiance, tested positive 2 weeks ago. But I had no concern then because she and I have really been fastidious about staying socially distant, putting documents that we had to hand each other on the conference room table outside of each of our offices, rather than handing it close to each other, and doing things like that, so that I had no concern then. The colleague, that, on the other hand, is a member of the legislature, and I was in close contact. Well, I say close. I was in a meeting with him on earlier this week, and unfortunately, he tested positive. He'll be fine. He's mm-hmm. healthy and younger. You know, myself, my wife, and myself, although healthy, are in the age group that's vulnerable. So more for her than for me. I'm concerned about coming down with it and living in the house with her, et cetera. That's the extent of my concern at this time. My friend John Alario, same age as me, same career and life experience and all that, went into the hospital and home, having recovered from it. So,
really?
Certainly doable. Yeah. That was last week.
And John Alario, as we know, many years ago, had a major bypass operation that was much more complex than it was anticipated, but he came back from that like a champ, and it sounds like he's come back from COVID-19.
Absolutely, absolutely, and was quoted in the article when he spoke, I think, from the hospital before even being discharged. He was an auctioneer down here in Jefferson Parish, said, look, I've had great care, I'm rebounding, and I've had nurse care from Kentucky, New York, and Louisiana, and God bless them all.
Well, so he is a warrior and a survivor, as are you, and Jim Donilon for almost 20 years was in the state legislature, and now he's coming up on 15 years as insurance commissioner. By the time he finishes his term, he will have been the longest serving commissioner in our state's history. And a listener making note of our previous guest, Edwin Washington Edwards, who turns 93 tomorrow, notes that the two of you had a long history and both on each other's side, and he may very well have cost you a congressional seat in 1980.
He certainly did to my now friend Billy Tozan, and Edwin, I see him pretty often. I bump into him here and there. He's still out on the campaign trail, I would say, and a healthy, vibrant 93-year-old. I didn't realize it was his birthday tomorrow. I remember when that birthday came up, when we were campaigning the first time he ran, and I was his Jefferson Parish campaign manager back then. And I used to remind Ashton Phelps that when I did sign on to support the reform candidate, Congressman Edwin Edwards, the Times-Picayune did as well and endorsed him in the first primary, which no doubt resulted in his winning that first election back in 72.
877-217-5757 for Jim Donilon. David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Commissioner Donilon.
Good morning, Mr. Donilon, and thank you, Jim. Mr. Donilon, I had a question regarding long-term care insurance policies with Genworth, and if you were aware of a lawsuit that has been instituted regarding class rate increases being looked at.
All right.
I'm not familiar with the lawsuit, but I will tell you, yesterday afternoon, we had another zone meeting, the Southeast Zone of Commissioners. We are doing our summer national meeting by virtual meetings, conference calls, WebExes, last week, this week, and next week. And the Southeast Zone meeting focused on long-term care insurance. And Genworth, the old GE plan, is the number one problem crisis, I dare say, in the insurance world, with repercussions that can be so large as to even threaten the continued regulation of insurance at the state level. And I don't say that lightly. That's a significant issue and a big threat. 5 years ago, the then CEO of Genworth came to Baton Rouge with his senior staff, met with my actuarial staff and myself to convey the message that they had 40% of the nationwide long-term care insurance market, 40%, no one else is even 10%, and they needed a 60% rate increase. He was going around to all 50 states with that message. They got rid of him, got a new CEO 3-4 years later. He came around, same thing, and repeated. And I had given them a 20% rate increase after that first round of visits, as had the average nationwide. Same message, 40%, 60% rate increase need. 2 years ago, they came back and said, after agreeing to sell the business to China Oceanwide, which is a Chinese insurance company, that their bylaws in China require that the board of directors of China Oceanwide have two board members that are members, card-carrying members of the Chinese Communist Party. And your business in the entirety of Genworth is being sold to them by not nearly enough money to close the hole that Genworth has. The last time they came to me after the announcement and approval. I think it had been approved by the three domestic regulators, New York, Delaware, and Virginia, that sale, and now has been approved by the Treasury, although Canada said no, and so they're in the process. It's been slowed down to spin off Canadian policyholders who the Canadian government said no to allowing the sale to go forward.
All right. 877-217-5757 for Jim Donilon and talk at talklouisiana.org. A question from Tom on Bluebonnet about flood insurance. Tom asks if he purchases flood insurance now, this would be August 6th, and a hurricane hits Louisiana on Labor Day, will he be covered?
The answer to that is no. I think Labor Day is after September 5th. I mean, before September 5th this year.
Actually, I think it's on the 7th. I think it's on the 7th.
Well, okay, well, it's close.
So
it's
he could be
30-day delay.
30 days.
30 days after you submit your application with your first premium.
But
before
you,
it goes into
you are a big advocate of people buying flood insurance.
Absolutely. Number one, as we head into the peak of the season, the peak, I heard you recounting before I came on, the history with Betsy, Camille, Katrina, and Rita. The peak of the season is actually September 11th, and we head to that peak from now up to that point and then back down by the end of September. And Colorado State yesterday upgraded their prediction from an active season to a very active season. We've already set the record for a G-name storm earliest ever and an H-name storm earliest ever. So we're really on the cusp of some threatening hurricane events. And the rule for flood insurance is you have to have it in place 30 days before the event does damage to you. For private insurance, homeowners or commercial property, the typical is the companies stop writing new business when a hurricane enters the Gulf and discontinue writing new business until it makes landfall.
877-217-5757 is your number. We're going to spend a few more minutes with Jim Donilon, insurance commissioner since 2006, elected in 7, 11, 15, 19. And last time it was a tough race. He got 53% of the votes, though, when many people counted him out. We've only got about 30 seconds, but I know that at one point you thought it might be a very long night as far as who won that race, but you ended up winning rather comfortably.
Indeed, it was very gratifying. I have truly enjoyed and appreciate the opportunity the people of the state have given me to represent them and serve them in this vital role in their lives, both in their homes as well as their businesses.
All right, we do have to pause, and we'll return with James Joseph Donilon III after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Insurance Commissioner Jim Donilon, and your number is 877-217-5757. Let's go to Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on the air with Commissioner Donilon. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. I got a question to ask Mr. Donilon. I was hit on a West Branch Expressway by a driver, and my insurance put her as 100% wrong, and her insurance put me at 50% wrong, but her insurance don't want to pay me no money for my damages. What should I do?
All right, Commissioner, I'm sure you hear questions like this all the time.
I do all the time, and the companies have the right in all 50 states to apportion the percentage of fault between their policyholder and the tortfeasor, the other involved party. If you dispute that, call us, and we'll send you a one-page form to file a complaint against that company. We'll investigate it and let you know what the outcome is. 800-259-5300. Can do it online, LDI, Louisiana Department of Insurance, .la.gov, 800-259-5300.
All right. Jason in Jones Creek says, I've maintained my flood insurance policy on my home, which is not in a high-risk zone and did not flood in 2016 for about 4 years, and this is the first year the policy increased, although only slightly. Should I expect this occasionally to occur?
Yes, and it's not under our jurisdiction. The National Flood Insurance Program is actually not insurance. It's a FEMA program administered by agents companies and claims adjusters, et cetera, on behalf of the program. It runs, it does the ministerial work for the program, but it is not really insurance. They set the rates based upon elevations, levees, flood history, et cetera. Very different mechanism for setting the rates than private insurance. For example, the homeowner's policy is done by actuarial analysis, a whole different set of factors. But it will occasionally go up, not as often as private insurance, and that is because of the nuanced, convoluted system that's used, and it's done by the federal government.
All right, Dana in Prairieville, Commissioner asks about your thoughts regarding the so-called tort reform bill that cleared the legislature and was backed by the governor, backed after he opposed the first round. What did you think of the end result?
Well, it's the typical sausage-making process of the legislature. It was a compromise. I did opine that I thought the original bills as introduced by Representatives Garofalo and Seebaugh and Senator Talbot would have reduced rates, I thought, as much as 25% if passed as introduced and intact. The watered-down version that ultimately was passed in the compromise with the governor, who, as you said, was opposed to those tort reform measures. My expectation is not much, but we'll see. I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic. I hope I'm wrong. And we're seeing rates decrease as a result of less driving. State Farm just announced nationwide a 9.6% rate decrease for their million auto insurance policies, on top of 14% they've done over the past year and a half, for a total of 23%. Their competition has followed to match that, to hold on to that business that State Farm's trying to take away from them. So we're down with the biggest insurer 23% over the past 2 years. And hopefully that trend will continue, although we would like to see folks get back to work and to school and driving is part of that, with more accidents to be expected. But the tort reform issue was frankly disappointing, but let's see what happens.
Well, and I know you're happy Major League Baseball is back playing.
I am. Haven't been able to pay much attention to it, and it's really kind of sterile with empty stadiums, but I haven't watched any of it yet. But I did watch last night, Jim, an incredible, on WLAE, an incredible 1 hour special on the 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers and their World Series. It's the week of the World Series, their only World Series win in the history of the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Well, they waited a long time to win one, and 1955 was also the first year that Sandy Koufax pitched for the Dodgers. 55-66, 165 wins, 87 losses, 2,396 strikeouts, 2.76 ERA for Sanford Koufax, who had the best five-year span of any pitcher in the history of the game. Number 32.
I think the best pitcher in the history, at least in my lifetime. And Tommy Lasorda was proud to say he got cut in 1955 to make room for a young phenom named Sandy Koufax, who had to be protected or was subject to becoming what is now called a free agent by the Brooklyn Dodgers. And they protected him, although he did not do much in the way of he didn't make much of a contribution to that 55 World Series championship.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure. Hope you get Same good
here,
news
sir.
From your
Thank
doctor.
You.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
And listener notes that Aaron Nola of the Phillies last night, it was a no decision. The Phillies ended up losing the second game of a doubleheader to the Yankees, but Nola pitched six innings, one run, three hits, and 12 strikeouts against the New York Yankees. 89 days from the election, Dane Sherman reports that Alan Lichtman, the professor at American University who's been on this show, who's predicted every presidential election correctly since 1984, is calling it, albeit very closely, for Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. He has 13 keys to victory, 7 go toward Biden and 6 toward Trump. So it's not a very comfortable position for Biden supporters, but Alan Lichtman, who's been right every year since 84, and some of those were very close elections, He says Joe Biden will be the 46th American president. I mentioned Mark Ballard earlier, and he is a great journalist in our area. Well, in New York City, there have been a bevy of fantastic journalists. It is, as I stated the other day, not only the center of the universe, but the center of American and perhaps world journalism. And one of the best-known reporters of his time or any time, Pete Hamill, died yesterday. It's a shame that writers and others who are featured in obits in the New York Times don't often get to read them. They do prepare these sometimes before the person has passed, but this one is exceptional. Pete Hamill, streetwise son of Brooklyn who turned a gift for storytelling, fascination with characters, and romance with tabloid newspapers into a storied career as a New York journalist, novelist, and essayist for more than half a century, died Wednesday in the borough of his birth. He was 85. In another age, when the newsrooms of Metropolitan Dailies pulse to the rising thunder of typewriters on deadlines, Mr. Hamill, a high school dropout who was searching for a future after years of academic frustration, Navy life, and graphic design work, walked into the city room of the New York Post in 1960, as he told it, and fell in love with reporting. "The room was more exciting to me than any movie. An organized chaos of editors shouting from desks, copy boys dashing through doors into the composing room, men and women typing at big manual typewriters, telephones ringing, the wire service tickers clattering, everyone smoking and putting butts out on the floor." Mr. Hamill became a celebrated reporter, columnist, and the top editor of the New York Post and the Daily News, a foreign correspondent for the Post and the Saturday Evening Post, a writer for New York's Newsday, The Village Voice, Esquire, and other publications. He wrote a score of books, mostly novels, but also biographies, collections of short stories, essays, screenplays, some adapted from his books. He was the quintessential New Yorker, savvy about its ways, empathetic with its masses and enthralled with its diversity, and wrote about it in a literature of journalism. Along with Jimmy Breslin, he popularized a spare, blunt style in columns of on-the-scene reporting and the authentic voice of the working classes, blustery, sardonic, often angry. Jimmy Breslin was on this show and noted his close association with Pete Hamill. Unfortunately, we never got to interview Pete, but he idolized Hemingway, as the Times reports, covered wars in Vietnam, Nicaragua, Lebanon, Northern Ireland. He lived in Dublin, Barcelona, Mexico City, Saigon, San Juan, Rome, Tokyo, but his roots were in New York, where he pounded out stories about murders, strikes, the World Series, championship fights, jazz, or politics, then got drunk after work with buddies at the Lion's Head in Greenwich Village. His presence at crises was uncanny. In 1968, steps away from his friend Senator Robert F. Kennedy in Los Angeles on the night Kennedy was assassinated, Hamill helped subdue the killer, Sirhan B. Sirhan. On September 11, 2011, or 2001, he was blocks away when terrorists attacked the World Trade Center, killing thousands, then described it in the Daily News. And unlike most print journalists, he was a bona fide celebrity. Featured in gossip columns, he dated Jackie Kennedy, Shirley MacLaine, and Linda Ronstadt, promoted books on television, photographed at society charity events, and imbibing with the glitterari, with the famous at parties, and whose friends included Norman Mailer and Jack Lemmon. In a tuxedo at a gallery opening or in shirt sleeves at the city desk, he looked like a fighter, a muscular, grizzled, chain-smoking raconteur who told stories in a whiskey baritone of growing up in a big Irish family in Brooklyn, of newsmen he had known, stories he had covered, and characters he had met around the world. Grist from the novels he churned out, sometimes holing up for weeks and working round the clock. Pete Hamill, dead at 85. He wrote several books, as we know, but his taste was eclectic. His books included Why Sinatra Matters, and A Drinking Life. He fought alcoholism, but he was able to live a full life, and he loved to walk. For more than 30 years, he would walk through his neighborhood into Tribeca, and he said, you could just sit on a bench, look at the harbor, look at people, just wander around and let the city dictate the script. That from Pete Hamill, 1935 to 2020. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Back tomorrow. Until then, thank you for listening and stay tuned.